Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for Friday Morning GM. We have not had a Friday Morning GM in quite some time with Vas Larikos on, and he's here today. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the Ravens' fringe roster battles, but how are you doing first, Vas?
Very good, Ken. Happy to be back here with you. Timing of everything seemed to work out good where the restaurant was open during the offseason and got up to speed, and we'll be able to take a little bit of a step back from operations now heading into the new football season. So everything's going great. Really looking forward to this Ravens season. Looks like a very formidable team entering this, and I'm hoping this is the year that they're going to get over that hump.
All right. Been a lot of fun. One piece of news came out today that I thought we'd address right at the top of the show, and that is the joint practice with the Commanders, which had been scheduled for this next Thursday after the Cowboys game. That's now off, and it was a mutual decision, reportedly. Vas, you've heard a little bit differently.
Yeah, it seems a little odd. You know, they said that there was a scheduling logistical problem, but they knew what the schedule was when they agreed to this practice. Apparently, the rumor mill is that the Commanders are banged up, and they play on Monday night. The Ravens play on Saturday, so they, I guess, wanted a little bit more time to rest before the third preseason game. So it apparently was a little bit more that the Commanders wanted to call it off than the Ravens.
All right, the Ravens also with some key players banged up who might play in a joint practice, and I'm talking about Hamilton, Jaire Alexander, Keaton Mitchell would be the guys. Those guys now, I don't see them seeing any action until the regular season. Harbaugh has already said a whole bunch of players, including everybody who didn't play last week, is not going to play in week one. If they don't play in week one or two, they are certainly not playing in week three of the preseason right before. So this means it's a clear shot to the regular season for a lot of the Ravens' high-profile players. Keaton Mitchell, I thought, got a little bit too much work for my liking in the first preseason game. If you were following on Twitter, you probably caught some of that. But, you know, a guy who's been the Ravens' best player in camp, and the Ravens really need him for the regular season.
I had the same exact thought. I said in my group text when they brought him out for the third drive, why is Mitchell still in there? What are we doing right now? And certainly want to keep these players healthy. We see some other teams, Cincinnati, for example, likes to play their starters. They've gotten off the slow starts in most Septembers recently, so maybe that's part of it. The Ravens do have probably the most challenging part of their schedule in September, so you won't avoid that. But John Harbaugh is great at getting his team ready for week one traditionally.
Yes. Yeah. So we should be able to look forward to that. I think, two very significant injuries for the Ravens in camp that are, you know, that most teams have some injury by now in camp, but the Ravens to have lost both of their sixth round cornerbacks to IR for the season. And these are both season ending. I know you guys are aware. We talk about the 54th and 55th spot on the rosters being IR spots. Your IR has to occur on cut down day for that spot to be used, for 54 and 55 to be used. So these guys are gone for the year, and their injuries are such that significant long-term recovery is involved. Both are having surgery, obviously. But my concern is not as much for the 2025 depth, which I still think is adequate. Good, in fact, by most team standards. But it's for 2026, because the Ravens have a number of cornerbacks who will be on the way out. And I'll start with Alexander, Awuzie, JAD is in the final year of his contract. Mm-hmm. And then we got to go to Marlon Humphrey, a guy who the Ravens have to pony up some serious money to extend.
Yes, Marlon will be entering the last year of his current deal next offseason, or next season, I should say. Just back to the rookies, Kone, obviously the double ligament in his knee. Longer beam, apparently some difference of opinion. Right, yeah. But Harbaugh wouldn't quite call up a patellar tendon, so who knows? I agree with you.
I think what Harbaugh was getting at, and I watched his body language and everything else as he was at the podium saying this, and you know, anybody else who was looking at the thing online could do the same thing. But he's not happy with the decision to have surgery, is what I'm gathering. He says, right. First question is, how do you define a tear kind of thing? Well, okay, you know, there are medical definitions of that, but there's also a gray area where the player has some choice on whether they get the surgery or they just try and rehab it. And Longer Beam went with the surgery, and I don't think that Harbaugh was entirely happy with that. That's what I would take from that.
Yes. Good interpretation there for sure. But yes, it's certainly a long-term issue as far as, you know, Nate Wiggins and Humphrey and Tampa would be your only corners with any experience if you're not able to bring back any of J.A.D. And Ouzier and Jair Alexander. Conversely, or maybe optimistically, maybe if the Ravens continue to stay on the precipice of a championship or maybe put another trophy in the case, they are able to continue to attract the Ouziers and the Jair Alexanders of the world for relatively modest contracts going forward.
Right. So cheap veterans who want to play cheap contract, one last chance to make a ring, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. And that's very attractive. I think Trey White really falls into that category potentially as well. All right. So what we thought we'd do today is talk about some of the Ravens who are on the fringe of the roster. And I try to come up with pretty much the entire list and talk about what are the reasons to keep them? What are the reasons to let them go? We can do this however you like, but I thought we'd start an offense at the running back position where Rashin Ali is the fourth running back. He's not really competing with anybody else for that spot. It's Rashin Ali or carry three running backs are kind of the two choices here. But a lot of people consider the fourth running back a luxury, but my reason for keeping him would be that returning kickoffs has an expanded importance this year, and running backs have proven to be better at that. And maybe that's a reason to take Ali into the regular season.
I definitely consider the fourth running back a luxury. Ali, I just think everything he does is replaceable by players on the street every single year. And I've seen Miles Gaskin now flash in reports who's been signed the last couple of days. D'Ernest Johnson's just a plotter. He's not going to do too much. But I think, first of all, Keaton Mitchell can return kicks. Justice Hill could still return kicks. He says he misses playing on special teams. And I don't see a reason why LeJonte Wester could not at least be given an opportunity. Maybe he doesn't quite have the bulk to play with a more condensed field, but his breakaway speed should play on kickoff returns as it does on punt returns.
Yeah, I think the part of what they're thinking about with the current, with the new rule, with the 35-yard line especially, is there are going to be opportunities for missed tackles forced. And your wide receivers are going to get fewer of those than your running backs. And that's where they, you know, a player like Ali would probably do better than a player like Wester, who is unbelievable lateral agility. And Wester's spot is one that I've taken off any possible lists of being on the margin. He's got the job now.
So in the context of this conversation, you're saying is keeping Rashin Ali on the 53 so he can help return kicks worth potentially losing somebody else that could be a depth player or rotational piece for several years going forward, hypothetically?
Yeah, that's where we are. I mean, Ali also, in theory, could be for several years going forward because he's only in the second year of his deal. But to lay that out there. But I also think Ali has a pretty good chance to last or make it through the waiver process and be at the top of the practice squad. Then you can elevate him three times and, you know, a player like Carson Vinson is kind of inert material on your regular season roster because he's never going to play, and yet you need to keep him there to make sure he's protected from waiver claims because he'll be taken in a heartbeat if he goes to the wire. So,
like Sinat.
Yep, like Gregory Sinat, exactly. It does kind of seem excessive to me that two spots would be assigned specifically to kick returns. And Mitchell is much more than that, but Ali would be pretty much his role. So we'd
see. If Ali could show a little something more as a receiving option, I think out of the backfield, it would be maybe more of a long-term investment will be worthwhile. But, you know, he dropped that, what was that, a screen pass or a dump off on the first drive, or not the first drive, but last week, which kind of soured, you know, highlights in the second half are outweighed by miscues in the first, in the preseason.
Yeah. It was also he had a couple drops last year, I believe, in his very limited playing time. So I don't believe they completed a pass to him last year. I might be wrong about that. All right, let's move on to the second. We got to kind of go through this, I think, a little higher rate, but I know there was a lot of interest in Ali. Zaire Mitchell-Payton and Scotty Washington are fighting out for the what I'll call the fourth tight end spot. I'm including Ricard in that group. If you want a plus for why you need one of those two players, and it's definitely an air quotes situation here, the team and the scheme, you may want it for blocking purposes. So there are that would be the reason why you carry one of those guys. If you're looking for a place where you find the roster spot for Rasheen Ali, that's your guy right there who loses his job and Ali is on the team.
I would probably prefer to go with 26 on defense, 24 on offense until Isaiah Likely's ready to return, and then you get back to your 25-25. I don't think there's a need for a blocking tight end with the improvement of Kolar's blocking as well as Ricard. So that's my 2 cents on that one.
Okay. I'm definitely not feeling like they need to have it. And I don't think that either of them has showed enough so far that they are pushing their way onto the roster or anything. Mitchell Payton is a very impressive athlete. Scotty Washington, not bad either. He had a great catch the other day, but neither of them is exciting enough as a receiving threat or as a blocker that, that one of them has to be on the roster. Let's move to the offensive line. Really, there are, I think, five guys who could potentially be on the fringe of the roster, and they go from, yeah, it'd be nice to have that guy, to I don't really care that much, but I guess he's a size and shape guy. So the first guy to be discussed is Nick Samak, and in a lot of ways, he's the tofu in this arrangement. I think he makes it through to the practice squad pretty easily if you cut him. But he played well in the 2024 preseason, which would be the major reason, I think, to keep him. He still has 3 years left on his rookie deal, but then we see Corey Bullock start the game at center against the Colts.
Yes, I think we'll talk about these two players in tandem. Bullock, I think, has a pretty good shot to make the squad at this point. BaltimoreRavens.com had a nice feature story on him today as we record on Thursday. He went to LaCharles Bentley offensive line camp over the summer, which I know you like when players invest in their skills. He's a local product out of PG County. He has put on some good bulk. He started out as tackle, moved his way all the way into center, and he was one of their highest graded offensive linemen throughout the league last year, as well as stacking this good game against Indy in 2015. So I like the prospects of Bullock. I'm a little surprised they didn't try to train up Dellinger to become, you know, be able to back up the center, but that's a decision they made. Here we are, and if the player's performing well, you know, the draft pick they used on Samak 2 years ago is a sunk cost, long gone by now. Right. Take the best 53, and Bullock seems to be the backup center right now.
I mean, it is even more than that. Bullock is in his first year, and Samak's in his second year, if you want to talk, you know, opportunity cost for these players. But Bullock's also significantly larger than Samak. You know, he's about 20 pounds heavier and an inch taller. And you mentioned his outstanding year last year. But it is a really important factor that Dellinger, who I guess is the next guy we'll talk about, didn't really get that opportunity at center, because Dellinger and Holski were two that were pointed out by Warhop as going to get time. Holski did end up playing at the tail end of the game as the three at center. But Dellinger never really got that opportunity. He played a lot of guard in this game, which is good, but he didn't play at center. So it looks like maybe the Ravens have him penciled in for 25 as a backup guard. But he still is on the fringe of the roster as well. Seventh round pick, so they might keep him, they might not. But he's got 4 years of team control. I think the biggest consideration for Dellinger is that he might be, or a big consideration, let's put it, the biggest consideration before was that he might have been the center in 2026 if Linderbaum left. Now it said he might be the backup center. That's a lot less of an importance. It's just he's got to be a good offensive lineman at this point.
Yeah, you'd like to cross-train him where he can back up multiple positions and you don't maybe some years you can only carry nine into the regular season if you can do that. But yeah, Bullock, I mean, if he continues on this trajectory, I don't see why he couldn't be a player that eventually takes over for Linderbaum as well. Yeah, and just a quick side note on Linderbaum, was messing around with OTC in preparation of this. His fifth-year option would have been the highest of any player in the first round.
Yep.
Because of the All-Pros multiple, and the Pro Bowls. Yeah. Okay. Even higher than like the number two, number three picks. So right. Don't take centers enough
for them to do that. And all along this process, I've been saying they're not going to do that. We've been talking about it on this show a fair amount. And the Ravens did it in as classy a way as they could. They say, hey, we want to sign both these guys long-term, but we're not offering the fifth-year option to Linderbaum. We are offering it to Hamilton. Finding the right price, I project, will be very difficult for the Ravens and Linderbaum. I think that if it doesn't get done, you know, almost before the regular season this year, risk starts coming off the table 1 week at a time for Linderbaum, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. The likelihood that he'll go to the free agency is a lot higher. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm in favor of getting the right price on Linderbaum. He's an important player. He's a you know, all the Ravens offensive linemen are important. You can't afford to pay every single player who's good across your whole roster when you have a roster like the Ravens. It looks like Adafi Owe is a player, for example, they're going to move on from just because the pricing at that position is too high. It wouldn't surprise me if Linderbaum were in. Frankly, the guy I think they can much less afford to lose, as I've said, you know, many times on the show, is Travis Jones.
Travis Jones and Kyle Hamilton. I think those are the top two long-term priorities.
It's likely third, and it was Linderbaum third. Yeah.
I put likely above Linderbaum personally. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
And likely at least they have the option to franchise him, which they could also do with Jones, potentially, depending on what kind of year he has this year. But they'd probably be working themselves up to a very expensive interior defensive line.
The number on defensive tackles is much higher than tight ends. I haven't looked at it recently, but I thought tight ends was about $14 million, and defensive tackles has to be over 20, least 20. I would say probably 25, just seeing some of the numbers that some of these guys have gotten recently.
All right. Well, hopefully they get it figured out with Travis before the season starts. He's critical. Yep. So the two linemen we haven't talked about, now the two offensive tackles. And Carson Vinson is the source of a lot of the difficulty in keeping yourself at lower than 10 offensive linemen. For starters, nobody's expecting him to step onto the field this year, except maybe Carson's parents and family and whatnot. Nobody else. Nobody. I don't think anybody in the Ravens. John Harbaugh was asked about Carson Vinson's performance. He goes, well, he's a developmental offensive lineman. I think, you know, for a developmental offensive lineman, he had a good thing. I'd be surprised if he's on the field in 25, and he might not even be on the field in 26. It'd be a win if they could get him on the field in 26 as a backup, and like he could take Note Boom's spot or something like that. That would be fine. There were things I liked about his first game, but the reasons to keep him, you know, are that he will never make it through the size and shape gauntlet and be left alone. I mean, the way that offensive tackles have been up in value the last few years, a guy like Vincent is grade A prime beef to be picked as a player.
For sure. You know, having a player that's on the 53 that never gets a jersey, I don't think it's the end of the world. I can't think of too many times where saying, I just wish I had one more spot on the 53. Mm-hmm. They've had times where they've, you know, basically all of the inactives have been walking wounded at certain times over the last couple of years. So, and I think the new IR rule also helps mitigate that a little bit. As far as Lichtenhain, any chance you would prefer to keep him in addition to Vincent instead of a backup IOL?
Well, not really, because he's a pure size and shape guy. You know, I guess Lichtenhain would be a better chance for IR this year if you really believed you wanted to keep him around for next year. Mm-hmm. He's a very raw prospect at this point. He's 6'8", 330, which is what you want. Very long arms, that's what you want. But he looked good as a run blocker against the Colts, not as a pass blocker. He got pushed around a little bit. The guy is extremely tall and quite soft when you look at him for an offensive lineman. I wouldn't say that to his face. He still would kick my ass, but he doesn't have the kind of, you know, guns for arms or, you know, muscles bulging out all over the place. He mm-hmm. maybe carries around a little more weight around his belly than what you expect for an offensive lineman. And he's not ready to play either. Is the simple chance. And I think you can afford to have one. You can't afford to have two. Vincent's clearly the guy. He's way ahead of Lichtenhahn in terms of who he is and what his baseline is. And there's a great chance in these next two games to get both of them about 100 snaps of offensive tackle play because you don't want anybody else in there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think these are the right kind of dart throws. I know you don't like that term. Excuse me. But the right kind of chances to take on day three with the Vincent, as opposed to somebody that just has a replaceable, you could find the same guy, UDFA, like a strong safety type or whatever. So let's hope it works out well. I think it's probably – it has to be 10 this year. I don't really see another way unless for some reason they would want to carry seven receivers if Anthony Miller maybe compelled them to keep him. But I really don't see it. I think they're locked in with six receivers – three tight ends until Likely comes back, and you go from there.
Miller, Kirkwood, those guys. First of all, they're kind of fungible. I can mm-hmm. take one, I can take the other. I don't really care that much. They got Sims. They have Dayton Wade if they want to bring him up for a game. All if you need an extra receiver, you need an extra special teams player, you need a return man, whatever it might be. All those guys, their biggest asset is their three activations for the practice squad.
Yeah,
they don't otherwise bring anything that's tremendously special. With the offensive line. One more time through the logic on this. You have to have 10 because number 10 is never going to play. And that means your nine guys, you have to have eight of them healthy every single week in order to make your eight-man roster there. And one thing I don't want to do is go into a game where your eighth offensive lineman, it can't play. I mean, he's too hurt to play. And you can only envision really extreme circumstances where you'd be in there. There's already going to be it's going to be unlikely that guy is going to get in the game, but I wouldn't want to be in a situation where he's basically walking wounded on the sideline in a uniform, as opposed to in street clothes or in the gear they give him for the day.
Well said. Definitely well said. So we move on to linebacker. I think this is a position
quarter, huh?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you got a quartet of young guys here now with Roquan as their leader. That's really a way to maximize your ROI on Roquan to have him coach some of these guys up. I'm pretty excited about these players, Chandler Martin and Higgins. Jay Higgins both played well. And I think Buchanan and Simpson and these guys, they bring some special teams ability, coverage ability. It's a good development.
Well, I didn't put him on the list, but the cost is not prohibitive if you wanted to cut Jake Hummel. He's only got $100,000 in guaranteed money. Yep. Exactly. So, mm-hmm. Your baseline number that you'd pay either Higgins or Martin, I believe, might be $840,000, or it's whatever the league minimum is for a rookie. Add that to the money that you lose from not keeping Hummel, and you still have a number that's lower than what Hummel makes all by himself. Now, yep. I understand the team wanted Hummel specifically. They went out and they got him because they wanted a special teams ace to replace all the special teams acery they lost with Board and Harrison specifically. They lost about 800 special team snaps. But Martin and Higgins, they're both ideal, core, and on the larger side of special teams players. Now, why that's important? There's a bigger group on your regular roster of the speed guys you need to play special teams than there are of the linebackers you need to play special teams. And that's why whenever a team goes out and they sign a special teams ace, well, almost all the time, it's a linebacker who has some reasonable speed. Kelly Washington, a big exception to that by years ago. And then Slater, who played all those years with New England and was a special teams ace, he'd be an exception too. But you look back to OJ Bergantz or, Stills, the guy who was there for a while, or Hummel and McClellan. I mean, they're mostly those special teams aces that you bring in are linebackers. Of the two, Martin has the speed to play exceptional special teams at 454, and Higgins was a 482 40 guy, which killed his stock as a linebacker. But the guy he knows where to be on a football field.
Yeah, and that, I think linebacker is one of the positions, and really all the positions where the Ravens have had great success with undrafted free agents are the positions that are not that you can overcome your size, speed limitations with instincts, whether it's safety, inside backer, nose tackle, running back, or IOL. Those are really the five. And, you know, two-time All-American at Iowa, that speaks pretty loudly. 6 foot, 230, both same size guys. I would be interested in keeping one, if not both, at least one on the practice squad and maybe one on the 53 above of Hummel, because you have more control. And if they can replicate what he can do on special teams, at least almost as good, 90%, I think that's a trade-off that I'd be willing to make personally.
So is there any trifecta where the Ravens can keep all three? One on the practice squad, one on IR, one on the roster, where you figure out how to do it. But the Ravens are masterful at using those last two spots. So if they have a hangnail or whatever minor injury they might want to talk about, they can get a guy on if they're willing to commit to not using him in the first 4 weeks. And I you know, it almost seems like the guy they would be willing to do that with might be Hummel over the other two. The reason being that I don't think you want to kill off the development for either the other players. I don't think it matters if Hummel's in the facility or not. Hummel, in fact, missed a whole bunch of OTAs with a hand cut, and he just showed up very late. So I think he'll be back playing good special teams as soon as he walks back into the building.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they released Christian Welsh, signed him to the P squad, and then elevated him when they needed him, and no one else poached him. So Hummel and Welsh may have some similarities there.
Yeah, I was talking to Zrebeck about this just a couple of days ago, might even been yesterday, and he said he thought Hummel is a guy you lose if you cut him, just because he'd go to another team and get some small bonus. I may be having the reason wrong that I'm quoting from Jeff, but he thought Hummel would be lost if the Ravens didn't follow through on the thing.
Well, regardless, it's exciting to have some UDFA rookies who are, you know, at least making a case to be considered. That only increases organizational depth overall.
Yeah, very, very deep group. By the way, William Kwenku, who got hurt in the game and was pulled, he was ahead of them on the order of entry. You know, so the Ravens are saying, well, we got this good guy, and then we got these two guys behind him. It's, you know, this group could be seven deep. And obviously, Kwenku is not going to have a spot, I don't think, with the team, even if he were to return right now, given how these guys played, and that includes the practice squad. But it's just very impressive how these guys came out in the fourth quarter and not only played well, I mean, they took over the game defensively. Mm-hmm. I mean, the two of them just were absurdly good.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to the next big one. And this is really the matchup we've been looking at all of OTAs, preseason, whatnot, is do the Ravens really have a spot for a sixth outside linebacker, or do they have to make a choice between Adisa Isaac and David Ajabo? And just to preface this a little bit, of course, when they picked Mike Green, he's got a spot. He ain't going nowhere. We know that. Adafi Owe and Kyle Van Noy are both here for this year and might be gone after this year. And then Tavius Robinson remains one of the Ravens' really important players. I think very underrated in a lot of ways, a guy who does a lot of the first down dirty work and has an extremely defined role with this team. And he's just frankly a lot better than Harrison was at a similar role last year.
I agree. Tavius Robinson has definitely grown on me. Had a chance to rewatch the playoff game, and he flashed tremendously in that game as a pass rusher as well. And I think there's still some untapped potential there, is him putting a hand in the dirt in pass rushing situations. So I would probably, if there's one kind of mid-tier player that you want to re-sign early, he might be it.
Yeah, he'd be a good
one. Yeah, and I would, if I had to bet now, I would say there's a better chance that neither Van Noy nor Ojabo are on the team next. I'm sorry, not Ojabo, are on the team next year than having one or both. I think there's a better chance that there's neither. But that doesn't necessarily help David Ojabo's case, because he's entering his, you know, expiring contract season. I thought he fared well in the preseason opener, not only with the untouched sack, but he had some pressures and beat his man on the first drive, which I thought was a good sign. And Isaac fared very well. We've been waiting to see Isaac. We've barely seen him on the field. Even last preseason, I think he had a groin injury or something. We didn't see very much of him. So if there is a way to keep five, I would rather keep five. I think your fifth outside linebacker has a better ability to impact your season than your fourth running back per se.
Yes, I agree with that. And in the case, I mean, there's multiple reasons why Adisa Isaac should be the guy. The first is he's got 3 years left on his rookie deal. You can't really top that. The second is that he's a very significant special teams player, and Ajabo is not. They're trying to use Ajabo in some special teams ways, I think, to improve his value, but that's not, you know, what he has done so far in his career. And I think he outplayed Ajabo versus the Colts. The Ajabo, the untouched.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Sack. He was good from several perspectives. The most important one, and the one everybody's talking about, is that it was a clean hit of the quarterback. It was a textbook heads-up tackle. Didn't drop his weight on the quarterback. All of those things. So it ended up being a big play. And still, Richardson hurt himself on that play. And it's really Richardson hurt himself by not watching out for Ajabo and reading hot on that side of the field.
Reminded me of the Rob Burnett hit that ended Akilee Smith's career. But he got it right underneath the helmet, but cleanly. So anyway, it's good to see Ajabo doing something. Maybe he's trade bait. He could be trade bait. And I think actually if he has a good game against Washington, they're a team that's probably looking for a little bit more help at edge rusher. They did sign Von Miller, but they're still not strong there. So maybe you showcase him in that final game and you can get something back for him. A guy with some ability that plays a premium position, I'd hate to lose him for nothing.
Right. Well, I'm in the same position, but I'm also I'm not entirely hopeful of what they'll get. I mean, Ajabo was a second round draft pick. People are going to be upset no matter what when he goes for either a conditional 6 or a regular 7 or whatever it might be. Could be a conditional 7, by the way. Could easily, that's what you get. Could be a player for player swap if there's another team that has a cornerback that you like. That would be somebody who'd make the bottom of the roster because they have 6 cornerbacks right now and they might really want to carry 7. So if there is a guy out there, it could be. And that's often a surplus position for teams, even with preseason injuries. But at this time of year, they're often have a surplus and then that surplus goes away on them later.
Yeah. So the big question for Ajabo is, can he help him this year? Because that's what you have him for. And then maybe potentially the compensatory value, but I don't see very much there unless he has a big year.
Right. Yeah. That's so far down the road in terms of actual value. I don't believe that's going to play out. Okay. So we have, let's go to the cornerback group right now. And we have several players. I've kind of tossed the corners and the safeties together, but let's split them out again. The 3 corners at the bottom of the roster, and I think 5 and 6 are clearly delineated after the first game. Jalen Armour Davis and TJ Tampa. TJ Tampa, of course, played 80 snaps. I wouldn't characterize his game as great, but it wasn't bad either. They threw at him constantly. He had 2 Brandon Stevens-esque passes defensed where he had no look on the ball, but it hit him in the back. And then Jalen Armour Davis played by far the best game of his Ravens career. He did a whole bunch of things that he had never done before.
Yeah, he really did. You know, late bloomer, maybe. Maybe Jalen is just a late bloomer. The key for him has always been staying healthy. He couldn't stay healthy at Alabama, couldn't stay healthy his first 3 years. But he does seem like a valuable depth piece at this point if he can stay healthy. TJ Tampa, I'm not positive his future, long-term future, remains a cornerback. Yeah. He seems to have he doesn't have the makeup speed or the frame necessarily to play corner. He might be better as a safety. I made note of that when he was coming out because he was a zone-based corner with a big body who was a pretty sure tackler. So, but as far as 5th and 6, I completely agree those 2 spots are locked up.
Yeah. So the next guy down, and I don't think he'll take Tampa's spot, but he could be the 7th corner on the roster, is Keon Martin. He's a rookie. Where's number 38? You look for him in Dallas on Saturday, but he has the slot versatility. He pretty much moved to be playing slot all the time with the 2s. This is with Humphrey out there, but Hamilton down, and who was the other guy down? Longer Beam down. So he's a guy who I think it would make a lot of sense. They've also moved one of their slot corners Reuben Lowry, who we'll talk about, to safety. So that's another case where I don't think Reuben Lowry's future is at slot corner. I think it's at safety. But Keon Martin would be a guy. He showed up pretty well. He's underwhelming in terms of his size. Certainly isn't going to displace either of JAD or Tampa. I think he makes it through to the practice squad without a claim based on what we've seen so far, and could be a valuable guy you bring up three times. And then that kicks the can down the road on making a decision about him on the roster. Maybe somebody gets hurt and all of a sudden, wow, we could really use Keon Martin.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. I don't think the slot cornerback skill set is rare enough to garner a 53 spot. Who was the slot corner last summer that was turning heads?
Not Mollett. You're talking about like a guy.
It was a young guy, like a UDFA, not Mollett. No, that was a bad re-sign.
Right.
Either way, it's regardless. The point is, there's a guy like that pops up pretty much every year, and you could find guys, and you could find Mollett's when you need to also. So yeah. I wouldn't. But as far as practice squad, I mean, you know, that the Ravens probably elevate more players to the practice squad and play the game better than anyone else.
Yeah. No, they have done a wonderful job with that. Okay, let's move to safety. Was definitely one of the biggest battles I'm looking for in camp, in OTAs and whatnot. And I guess maybe a little bit surprisingly, and not without some staggered successes here, Sanusi Cain has stepped forward from the other two in terms of separating himself as the third deep safety guy can play a half field. And the other two, there are questions about each of them. Bo Braid, good special teams contributor. He's had highlights as a pass rusher these last few days in particular. I think he had two PDs as a pass rusher in maybe three practices. He has some back end experience, but it's not much, and very limited success in anything that's not downhill play from really level two. So he makes a lot of sense at dime back, can help you on special teams, but you know, he rushes the passer, and that's a great use of him. He can help with the run, and that's a good use of him. But you get him into space, and it's just not the ideal spot for him.
Yeah, that's really not what I'm looking for. I think I'm looking for somebody that allows Kyle Hamilton to rush the passer and come downhill, because he obviously is a very rare playmaker in that regard. The last episode of Friday Morning GM that I joined you on, which got to be at least 6 weeks or 2 months, I think it was close to minicamp. We identified third safety as a legitimate need. It's encouraging to hear that Sanusi Cain has kind of claimed that spot. Would you feel comfortable with him on the back end, freeing up Hamilton to come down and play the slot or even play dime backer?
Shades of gray here. You know, if I'm about what's my comfort level from 1 to 10, 4.5, 5.5. It's not super high. I mean, you know, that's not what I want in terms of a dime package. Does not include Sanusi Cain on the back end. If they got to that point during the season due to injury, as it stands right now, I mean, there's a chance Sanusi Cain could be a starting safety period with in a two-man room if either of the big two got hurt.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not crazy about that.
How does Lowry compare to Cain as far as split field?
Okay, so Lowry, what I say is the Ravens have a type. Okay, Lowry is almost a perfect comp, a little bit faster, but almost a perfect comp in other ways for Jeremy Lucien. So Jeremy Lucien, mechanical engineering degree, Lowry, mechanical engineering degree. And they both come to the team with an understanding and a quick pickup of the playbook. And I think that's part of what's made them both at different times exciting to the Ravens. And, you know, Lucien never got in a game for the Ravens, but he stuck the entire year on the practice squad, and he had some practice squad honors that he won while he was there. So, you know, practice squad player of the week, that kind of thing. Then they brought him back after they cut him. So they liked him. I mean, they really liked him a lot. They just, you know, there was more experience at safety was required. In the case of Lowry, I think they like him right now, and he's faster. I think he has probably a very good idea of where to be in terms of his assignment. And there would be some questions about how quick is his reaction time and his instincts in terms of translating what he knows about that and what he can read from a player to going to the right spot. So I think that's still a question. He's a size and shape guy. He's a 5'9 guy, but he's a lot bigger than Ardarius Washington. He weighs like 204 pounds. So weighing that and still being able to run, he's going to be able to thump, and I don't think it'll be a problem in run defense. Made a number of good plays on the back end in camp. He's been burned a couple times too, but he's made a number of good plays on the back end in camp. I want to give you a chance to respond to that, and then I want to kind of compare him to one other player.
Well, no, just hearing that report, I mean, I think Lowry should be rostered. And if there's a chance that he could be a better split field safety than Sanusi Kane after a little bit of development, I think that's a need on this team. So I think that Lowry, even though he doesn't have the experience of the other, I think he should be maybe ahead of them on the pecking order.
Right. Well, I'm with you there. And if you're talking about Lowry versus Braid, that may not be a choice the team has to make. You know, for a lot of reasons, it makes sense that they would carry 11 total defensive backs. And so it might be one extra safety, have five. I do like carrying five safeties if you're going to play a fair amount of dime, and especially if you're going to have Hamilton up in the slot, because it gives you the five to make four selection to do those spots, or four to make three on a game day that you might want. If you're not playing Hamilton in the slot. So I like carrying five safeties. And for that reason, you know, Braid would make sense. And if you're going to play a dime, I think Braid could be your dime back. I think, you know, Hamilton could be a guy you keep in the slot, Braid at dime back. You'd have Sanusi Kane probably on the back end, splitting the field with Starks.
Yeah. They need to be prepared for pass heavy, game plans, because they're probably going to be carrying a lead in the fourth quarter, a lot of games, if you look at the odds makers projections.
Yeah. And that's a good point. You want to close out games, then having some specialists and a dime back and an undersized pass rusher are the two guys that can really help you there. So Aeneas Peebles could be a great closeout player. And because he can play nose tackle, you know, presumably if you're in the fourth quarter and you're just trying to pin your ears back and get after the quarterback.
Sure.
And I think the same could be true of Braid as a dime back. They have, one of the things about this year is they do have some options in terms of coverage that we're not really sure about, with both Simpson and Buchanan at that will spot, that either of them might end up probably being a slightly better coverage player than Braid. And if that is true, then Braid has no value to the team as a dieback, because he's smaller and he's, you know, not going to meet up in the other standards.
Yeah. You said you were going to compare Lowry to
another player? So the other player is Tampa that I would, you know, compare him to in terms of the, you know, where he is. I mean, Tampa could move to safety. Lowry will be a much quicker conversion to safety because of who he is. I'm just his ability to pick the game up, and he'll need to have on-field experience. He'll need to, you know, get the instincts portion of this down. But, you know, Tampa's a guy who's been beaten more than Lowry in camp. He's also made some plays. I mean, Tampa had an interception, I think, in the very last practice. So there's been good plays too. But I'd say, generally speaking, if I had to pick the cornerback who's had the highest on the totem pole and the, you know, most times beaten, it's probably Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what it seems by reading the reports. You know, obviously I haven't been there, but you know, Lowry seems like a find. So I think he did play a little bit of safety in college too, maybe his freshman and sophomore year. So he has some experience there, and potentially some versatility in the slot, like an Ardarius potentially. You would know better than I, but he seems like a keeper to me.
Yeah, I'm getting the sense we're headed that way. Now let's get on to the last position, where this is really cool to be having this discussion about this position, because I didn't think that we would even have the opportunity. But you look at the Ravens defensive line depth, and 2 weeks ago, the team went out and signed Brent Urban. And what that says is, damn it, we don't have nearly enough defensive line depth. We got to go out and get Brent Urban. And I don't care how you're going to use Urban, whether you're going to handshake him, start him on the practice squad, you know, wait for the opportunity for him to be the sixth guy because you lose somebody, you're concerned about durability. But the one thing Urban does not do for you is address the weakness at nose tackle. So
yes,
you don't have any problem with your number one nose tackle, but you potentially had big problems with your 2, 3, and 4 nose tackles.
Yes. A little bit of a curious case with Urban. I don't know if maybe they were waiting for him to be able to clear physical or what it was, but I'd like to upgrade over Urban if possible. He's been a great Raven, admirable player. But I'm pretty excited that last time we talked, we were saying they need another safety, they need some depth on the defensive line, they need some backup inside linebackers. And now all of a sudden we're talking here now 2 months later and they found all these players. You have to hat tip to Eric DaCosta first and foremost. John Jenkins, a player I've been familiar with for many years now, going back to his days when he was playing at Georgia. I don't know if maybe the Roquan Smith connection had something to do with him coming here. But
I think they played together. Jenkins is 36, so I don't. I'm guessing they didn't play together.
Yeah, no.
He might have been back for visits or something.
Yeah, you know, they all kind of have that camaraderie. Like the. But anyway, he seems like a capable run stuffer, and I thought he showed some unexpectedly good ability to rush a passer, almost like a Michael Pierce. Michael Pierce, probably the most important player they lost from last year, so they had to replace him. And so that's my take on Jenkins. Jones is also another big body guy. I think he's probably a practice squad player who can get in the lab, get in the room, get some reps, get in the weight room, and come back next year and maybe improve the way that Okoye has.
Yeah, let's go through all those players, and we'll start with Jenkins. It was surprising at how effective he was as a pass rusher in the game against the Colts. He's only in there for six snaps. He got two complete walk back pressures. Looked like Michael Pierce, you know, in terms of, you know, his size and whatnot. There have been issues with Jenkins. I've seen him on the stationary bike in practice a fair amount. He's had some windedness about him, which has also been something I've seen from Okoye, by the way. He was in one game. It's the very beginning of practice, first 11 on 11 section. He was in for two snaps. All of a sudden, I noticed he's got his hands on his hips and he's huffing and puffing. Took him out of the game. They put him on the stationary bicycle. It wasn't a good look. But the Jenkins thing really, really showed that he had a little bit of juice as a pass rusher. And maybe that's what they want. They want a guy who can get under the pads of a guard or center and push him right back into the quarterback and force that double team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want. You know, Brandon Williams played for the Ravens for a long time and didn't have that ability as much. Michael Pierce did, and I think it did a tremendous value for the defense. Pressure up the middle is undefeated. You know, all the best quarterbacks, no one, Tom Brady, whoever it is, they always, Mahomes, all of them. So, yeah, I would definitely prefer somebody with a little bit more penetrating ability versus just a pure two-gapper. But they have some good options here.
Yeah, let me go to number two here, which is I'll go Jason Jones. I'll go the same order you did. Also a very good game against the Colts. He's a size and shape guy. There is a non-zero risk of a claim immediately on the guy. And there's a very high risk of a claim at some time this year or signing at some point this year off the Ravens practice squad as depth attrits throughout the league at the nose tackle position. And if you're a second tier team that isn't really in playoff contention, then Jason Jones is perfect because you'd be rostering him for 26 knees rather than 25. And so he'd be a guy that would be exciting from that perspective. He's currently fourth on the nose tackle depth chart, but I like who he is as a player. And I think you're right. I think he's what I noticed on the field so far this summer is he's in far better shape than I thought he was going to be. He's a 6'5", 325. It looked like he's playing kind of with a big gut at Auburn. Really carrying that weight not too well. Mm-hmm. I think he might still weigh the same, or maybe he's 5 pounds lighter, but he carries it a lot better right now. Now he looks in mm-hmm. good shape, and with the conditioning being an issue with Jenkins and Okoye, that I found to be a refreshment from Jones in terms of what he's done. Has not gotten a ton of high quality reps in camp, and he was the last off the bench. It's not really fair. Everybody played rotationally on the defensive line, so he's in fairly early in this game, and I expect him to get a ton of snaps these next two games.
Yeah. The one tidbit I'd add is Dallas is desperate for run-stuffing defensive tackles. Oh. They probably have the worst depth chart in the league as far as that skill set. So might want to think about how to best deploy the players to maximize the Ravens benefit there.
Visibility. Yep.
Yes.
Obviously they've got multiple options here. I'm not sure I would be against trading any of them, but CJ Okoye has taken on a different level in my mind in terms of what he did. He had by far the best game of any of the nose tackles this first time. I look at Jenkins and the Ravens got him for a reason, and he's played the most snaps of his entire career the last 2 years with Las Vegas. So I don't think he's a guy who you can say, oh, he's done. There have been some senior citizen nose tackles in this league who played pretty long. Go back to Calais Campbell in terms of defensive linemen recently who played that much that late in their career.
He signed with theirs. He's back with the Cardinals.
Did he sign just last week or something?
I don't know. I saw the depth chart the other day. It raised my eyebrow.
All right. And it wasn't just retire as a guard. He's not showing up for a press conference with that sign.
I'll double check, but I think he's planning to play.
Oh, good for him. Good for him. Anyway, Okoye is the biggest of the size and shape guys they have at nose tackle, a 370-pound man. He's absolutely enormous. And by the way, whenever they talk size, they don't even really talk Daniel Faalele anymore. They talk CJ Okoye. It's like, that's how I knew I was in the NFL. I was next to CJ Okoye in the huddle. I forget who said it. And he's absolutely enormous. And I thought, wow, that's really good. But here's the question. Now, we included John Jenkins on this list. And the reason you can do that is John Jenkins is signed for a total of, I think it's $1.85 million. And by the way, if you go out to OTC, you'll see a larger number than that. I think it's wrong because they have his per game roster bonus at $1,170,000, and I believe it's only $170,000. So they have it $1 million too high. They have his thing, but I believe he gets $10,000 per game in terms of being on the 53. So anyway, that being said, he still makes $1.85 million for the year, and Okoye would make $840,000. And then you'd also have to ascribe to him the $325,000 in guaranteed money, or $1.165 million. You still have a $700,000 savings over the Jenkins contract to go with 4 years of team control. That is an easy decision to make. Now, Jenkins will go somewhere else. He'll play in the league. I don't think he'd make it through to the it wouldn't be a matter of making it through waivers because he's a veteran. He can sign where the hell he wants. Same with Hummel, for example, in terms of not having to go through the waiver process. But Okoye, you have 4 years of runway to have this guy grow, even though he's been kind of a failed practice squad player for 2 years now.
So, Calais Campbell signed for $5.5 million with Arizona, 1 year deal.
Damn.
So he's expecting to play, including game bonuses. It's actually $6 million cap hit. I'm in lockstep with you on Okoye. I'm excited about this player. He flashed early and often in preseason week one. The imposing size is exciting to me. There have been playoff games where the Ravens' defensive line got pushed around more than I was expecting, and I want to be the biggest, baddest team you can have. And you have these two, a massive hulking right guard and potentially Ben Cleveland come in as a sixth offensive lineman, and Okoye, I think Cleveland and Faalele are the two biggest players in the league last year. I saw a graphic at one point that they were the two largest players in the league. But he's 23 years old. And another interesting note that I saw just doing a little bit of research, the same day the Chargers released him from their practice squad, the Ravens signed him to a future deal. The same day. So they had their eye on him. And he also has a Nigerian connection with the Nigerian defensive linemen and pass and edge rushers that are on the Ravens. So I'm intrigued. I'm excited. And is there a way to keep six defensive linemen if you only go 24 on offense with likely on the IR?
Possibly. You have five outside linebackers and only 10 defensive backs. You could get there. There is a way to keep a sixth defensive lineman, and a lot of people would tell you that's the position where you really want it because you rotate at that position.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. I'd be perfectly fine with that as an option, with trying to slip Jones through to the practice squad. And if Dallas wants Jones badly enough that they'll pony up a six for him, say, or a conditional six, dropping to a seventh if he doesn't play much, that's fine. It'd be some return on a guy who was undrafted that the Ravens found a gem.
Yeah. Sure. Keep trading up. What's that? The TV show or something where they start with the one. So, I think the defense is in a good place. It's just look at the defensive depth chart and you want to keep 26, maybe even 27 guys. That would be extreme. But I think with the IR rules and maybe depending on what happens with likely, I think there's a possibility. And I think they did it. I think they did it the year Brandon Trawick made the 53 and they kept six safeties. And that's going back probably into the kind of the,
that's a name.
the dark era of the end of the Flacco era. But I do think they kept 26 at one point, and they had six safeties on the roster. I do remember that.
It is my recollection that they also did it one time. But I'll point to this, is that they have a tremendous aversion to doing so. And the coaches are part of it. The offensive coaches stick up for wanting 25 players. And the defensive coaches stick up for wanting 25 players. And there has to be an enormous rift, you know, between the talent levels on the two sides of the ball to go out there and find that extra player. I don't see it as really being there. I think you can make a case for Rasheen Ali to be number 25 on offense, or perhaps for the third tight end to be there because they need him for scheme purposes, which, by the way, is exactly where the coach argument gets involved. It's like, you're not going to leave me shorthanded at tight end, are you? You know, and yeah. It's the kind of thing that I don't really see happening. I see this being another 25-25 year, as much as, you know, it looks like there's a little more talent on the defense, obviously, to choose from.
Yeah, we'll see. I think maybe a better way to look at it is 23-23 and four special teams players, and you see whether they come from what side of the ball better. But I'd like to bring up one other player who was not on our pre-draft notes, but Cooper Rush. I think he needs to show a lot of improvement in this second half of the preseason here. He's throwing picks. He's just not looking like he can handle the – and obviously he has a history with Todd Monken. Maybe that's the reason why they kind of targeted him. But he does have it's a two-year $6.2 million deal with $4 million guaranteed. They would have to eat $2 million of dead cap if they released him before the season. But at some point, if you're underperforming that poorly, $2 million is a small price to pay to not ruin your season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with the logic on you can eat the $2 million and go out and get a different backup quarterback. It's just that Leary is not the guy. I mean, he's got a bullet of an arm, or a rocket of an arm, I should say. But he just does not have the accuracy that you'd want from your third quarterback. Rush is getting the practice snaps right now, so they kind of are moving into their mode, which they're kind of in all the time, where the third string quarterback gets almost no reps. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jackson gets his rep, Rush gets a few less reps, and then Leary maybe gets one rep before the end of the segment, and then they blow the horn and they move it to the next thing that they do. I will say one of the funniest moments in a really bad way from this camp so far at the podium was yesterday when Cooper Rush was at the podium and they asked him, do you want to go back to Dallas and show them how good you are now? And I want to get the words exactly right. And he says, right now, I want to show the Baltimore Ravens how good I am. Yes, that's a good plan of action there.
Yeah, for sure. That's well said. Well said, yeah. Cooper. Oh, that's
good. All right. Yeah. Voss, always a pleasure to get back talking football with you. It's we've run a little longer than normal here, but always a great episode. How are things going with you? Anything you want to tell people where to contact you to talk football or anything else you want
Yes,
to talk
about? Absolutely. So I'm on Twitter X at Vasilis Fiamata, VASILISFIAMATA. Not on there as much as I used to be, because I am busy with Fiamata, the restaurant that I opened almost 6 months ago now. It's located at 2900 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg, Maryland, about halfway between Westminster and Reisterstown. And I encourage everybody, when you're in the area, come check out our cuisine. I put our quality and consistency up against anybody's.
Well, go ahead and make sure you give Voss's restaurant a choice. I had the rigatoni. I loved it. And I had a pizza there, a meat lover's pizza the second time around. I love that too. So appreciate your place, Voss. Other folks out there, if you'd like to do something nice for the show, I'd like to do two things if you can. Write a 5-star 50-word review, if you don't mind taking 10 minutes to do that. Or tell your friend that doesn't know about Film Study Baltimore, and there are still a lot who do not know about either Friday Morning GM or some other podcast on this, tell them about it and get them listening to it once. Help them find it on their phone, whatever it might be. Really appreciate you. Outstanding audience. You guys are the most, absolutely the most loyal audience in the entire podcast sphere. We talk about that all the time among various content creators, just how incredibly loyal you are, and really appreciate that. Voss, thanks again for being back. It almost feels like you're a guest host, but we are planning that you'll be back for the regular season and be the regular host, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, sir. Looking forward to it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.